Welcome to the Scaredy Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Schwinniger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a lovely five-star review and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk about some recent news headlines and hopefully provide some insight, analysis, and practical application that you could take back into the office to help protect your organization.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
And remember, everything blends except Chuck Norris. All right. So our first article is Russia to rent tech-savvy prisoners to corporate IT. And this comes to us from Krebs on Security. So apparently the Russian Federal Penitentiary Service has announced a plan to use IT specialists from the prison system to work remotely for commercial companies. You know, this kind of reminds me of, man, I can never remember that character's name in Freedom, the Daniel Suarez book.
I know who you're talking about. He's the guy who's working in the jail and they transfer him to the minimal jail and then change his name and change his sentence on the way and then
walk him out the door.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The demon champion. Mm. But yeah, it's kind of along those lines. This would be the modern version of the Shawshank Redemption where those guys were up working in the fields. It's a little bit rougher work. So according to the article, it says Russians sentenced to forced labor are going to be subject to this. And it was interesting that they said sentenced to forced labor. Now, in the United States, people can be sentenced to hard labor. And that's actually a sentence. It's not that, you know, if you go to prison, you will be subjected to hard labor. You can be sentenced to hard labor. And if you're sentenced to hard labor, the work is compulsory and you are not provided any compensation for it. You know, kind of like slavery.
There's a get out of jail free card for the government, though, because the 13th Amendment says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So in other words, just like they could sentence someone to 10 years, they can sentence someone's death, they can sentence them to years of slavery.
Which I still think is bullshit, by the way. I think slavery is slavery, but anyways.
Right. I mean, this is the whole chain gang thing. You know, when you work in the chain gang, that is slavery. Actually, it's like, if you've seen Shawshank Redemption, that's the exact same thing.
Yeah, and we all know that the courts always are fair and non-biased.
And always get their man.
Oh, yeah.
Or a woman.
They've never been proven wrong, ever.
No. Flawless.
Completely.
So that made me wonder if Russia has a similar thing where, you know, you could be sentenced to prison or you could be sentenced to prison and forced labor, or everybody that's sentenced to prison in Russia is forced labor. Because I actually, you know, I don't pay much attention to court drama as it is, but, you know, that always used to be a thing when you'd watch the old movies where they'd say, I'm going to sentence you to 12 years hard labor. But you don't hear much about that anymore. So I don't even know if that's a typical thing that you still do.
And you'd think that that almost be like, oh no, you're sentencing me to sit at the computer for 12 years and type. How terrible is that? You'd think it'd be almost be the opposite, right? Like you're the computer programmer. You are sentenced to 12 years of breaking rocks into small rocks. You'd think you'd want them to do the opposite.
Oh, like their own personal hell.
Yeah, exactly. They're there to be punished, right?
Well, unless the government can make a dime off them.
Well, that's true.
But Alexander Karbunov, the deputy head of the Russian Penitentiary Service, said his agency has received proposals from businessmen for workers or for prisoners to work remotely for commercial companies. And to quote him, he said, we are, obviously he's English is his second language. So he says, we are approached with this initiative in a number of territories. A number of subjects by entrepreneurs who work in this area. And he's told this to the Russian state media.
I love that it's entrepreneurs. They're like, all right, I need somebody to build my next great idea, but I'm not willing to pay actual salaries.
Yeah, they actually, the entrepreneurs in Russia go to the government and say, hey, I can use some prisoners. But that also got me thinking, you know, if it's entrepreneurs, my guess would be that these are like, you know, the service providers. They're not actual companies saying, hey, I need an IT department. So where do I get an ID? Or with the prison system. So I think this is going to be, you know, service providers that are going to partner with the government to get these IT folks. And then they are going to contract with other companies to do IT services. That would be my guess.
Yeah, because you don't know when you're going to lose someone because they got in a prison fight or something, or they were released as part of their sentence. So you need to be able to slot them in and out of roles. And that makes sense as part of like an MSSP or something.
Yeah, imagine if you got access to their trouble ticket portal. It is like, yeah, Bob's in solitary. You can't work on this ticket anymore. Like her Bob was shanked, you know, replacing him with Jim.
Bob was shanked. He's with the medicos for a couple of months.
Well, Matt was saying a second ago, they said that they're not going to force specialists in this field to work in some other industries.
Yeah, like breaking rocks. Yeah, sorry. I jumped the gun. That's what always happens.
Always reading ahead.
We put together our notes on this, and that like puts the ideas in your head. And then when we start talking about it, they're there.
And you can't get rid of it. It just tracks.
Exactly.
There.
Yep.
But it's interesting. I don't know if this is to say that they're not going to bait and switch saying, hey, do you agree to this, to sign up to do work maybe, you know, and then they're like, oh, it's like, you're not going to be doing IT work. Instead, you're going to be taking this ansicle and cutting a week or, you know, something like that.
No, you're right. I mean, it's probably better. You probably don't want as an IT person to be letting your skills atrophy while you're in prison. You're probably happy to be doing some kind of work. And it depends on what crime you're put in there. Like if yours was a crime of passion or something, it's not related to your IT work. Like if you're in there because of, you know, fraud or something, that's a little different.
Right. Well, it could be also that you know, Russian computer guys are much like American computer guys. So you're not going to put a bunch of scrawny or overweight pasty guys out in the field doing hard labor. Just, you know, it's just a recipe for disaster.
They get about 15 minutes of work done and they're like, oh, all right.
It just collapsed out of the spot.
Speaking of which, my son and I went to New York to break rocks last summer, and that's hard work. I didn't get much rock breaking done. Yeah. We went to break rocks on purpose. We paid money to go break rocks. It turns out that is really hard work.
Holy cow, you're a sucker.
I have two 5-gallon buckets worth of broken rocks.
I was going to say, you could just stab somebody and then you wouldn't have to pay to do it.
But I don't get to choose where to break the rocks in that case.
Yeah, long trade-offs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so was it like a 20-pound sledge or?
I had a 12-pound sledge that I was using, and I think my son was using a 5-pound.
Oh, so he's used hammer.
Effectively. Sounds cooler if you say sledge.
Yeah. Interesting. So is this like at a quarry?
Basically it's a quarry. There's a bunch of them, and there's a layer of rock up in New York that has the cavities where the Herkimer crystals grow, and it's a layer of dolomite. So you're working on chipping your way through that layer of dolomite to find those cavities.
Wait, you were with the sledge breaking dolomite?
Yeah.
With Shaft there. No.
Ah, boy.
What about other prisoners? No?
There are no other prisoners there. There were other suckers that paid.
Did they put a ball and chain on your ankle or something to make you feel at home, make you more comfortable doing it?
No.
I gotta say, that's just weird.
That's fair. I won't ask you next time.
Okay. I'll make it. You know, and this seems to come about when Russia seems to be experiencing a shortage of IT workers. So apparently there are 95,000 vacancies in IT, and the unfilled job slots actually shrank 25% from the previous month. So last month, there were 25% more folks. So, you know, close to 120,000 people are empty slots in IT. And the writer Krebs seems to think that this is due to sanctions fallout. So I'm not sure exactly what that means, though. So I was trying to think of you know, what the impact of sanctions would be on decreasing the amount of IT openings. So does that mean that previously there were Russian IT workers that maybe just worked remote for other countries, and now they can't do it because of sanctions or something like that? I'm not sure.
It could be just the drawdown in business. I mean, if Russian companies are no longer allowed to work with companies outside of Russia, maybe their business is going down.
Right. So maybe the 25% is just slots were gone.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard that already. A lot of the tech companies, as their stocks are drawing down. I was reading some article today. I don't think it's one of the ones we're talking about, where they're saying that a lot of the tech companies probably have twice as many workers to four times as many workers as they actually need. They were, you know, because valuations were high and money was high, they were all kind of, you know, just bringing in people and going a little crazy.
Seems odd.
I don't know. They said they were talking about Twitter in specific. They think that if Elon Musk does take it over, he's going to fire 3/4 of the people that are there. They don't think they need 8,000 employees.
Interesting. Yeah, I suppose and it depends on how direct the jobs are relating to the output for whatever the company produces.
Hmm.
You know, because if you hire a back-end person, it's hard to say whether they are providing value to increase your revenue. You know, they're an overhead effectively. Mm-hmm. So how do you translate to whether they're valuable or not versus someone who's actually on the line or whatever, directly generating revenue for the company, which is much more easier to tell, hey, we added this person, therefore our output increased by X, or you know what I mean? But anyway, the Russian Association of Electronic Communications estimated that recently between 70 and 100,000 IT specialists will leave Russia. So with the 75,000 open slots, they're expecting that to even increase because the number of IT workers are going to jump ship. And they said that that number is continuing to grow. So, you know, maybe 70 to 100 now, and that's going to grow to 150 or even. But one thing they're not certain of, at least Krebs wasn't, is the number of IT specialists that are in prison right now that couldn't fulfill these roles. And if they are, you know, are they all from ransomware gangs?
I mean, they only arrest a couple of the people from the ransomware gang, so who knows?
Yeah, so Russian's prison system currently houses 875,000 inmates. It's about 615 per 100,000 citizens. To put this into perspective, the United States has 2.2 million inmates, which is 737 per 100,000. So not quite trip the number of inmates in the U.S. prison system. But he had an interesting quote in here from Sergei Brinsky, who is the chairman of the Russian Duma's Committee on Information Policy, said that since they work there, it would probably be right to give people with a profession that allows them to work remotely, not to lose their qualifications. And I thought that was awful nice of them. And just because we throw them in prison doesn't mean we should allow them to lose their skills.
But don't most I'm thinking certifications, not qualifications, but I feel like a lot of certifications have some sort of morality or some kind of standard where they want you to not get arrested, right?
You would think so. But I think the way that he called this as qualifications, I think this is more along the lines of, you know, if you fail to program for, you know, if you're a programmer and you don't program for X number of years or something.
That's fair.
That's a skill that you're going to have some memory loss, some skill loss over that time.
Ethics. That's the code of ethics. Right. All right. No, but you're right, because that's always been a problem, reintegrating back into society when you get out of jail. Reintegrating back into society is always tough. And it does make sense if you spend your time in jail breaking rocks and you come out and you're like, I have developed a new expert level skill in breaking rocks. That's difficult to find a job for.
Well, if you listen to that interview with Ben Johnson by, that's that fellow's name now. Dang, I can't remember, but we'll put a link in the show notes. But Ben Johnson's got it started, Shadowproof. And when he went to prison, he ended up conducting classes on how to commit fraud for other prisoners. And I've often heard prison, you know, is like college for criminals.
Yeah.
You know, so they go in there and they learn new criminal skills while they're in there.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the concept here kind of would be, well, let's give them other skills here or allow them to maintain the skills they have so that when they get out, they don't revert back or they don't commit criminal actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, the downside of this is that depending on how many of those people are from ransomware gangs, you may end up with a whole lot more ransomware programmers.
Yeah, and increasing the programming skill, you have even better ransomware.
Yeah.
But it seems like in the Russian prison system, even those sentenced to forced labor, get paid. Whereas in the United States system, if you're sentenced to hard labor, you don't get paid.
Sometimes you do.
No. Hard labor. If you're sentenced to hard labor, no pay period.
Oh, I see.
But if you are in prison, but not sentenced to hard labor, you do get paid in the American system.
Interesting. All right.
But in Russia, if you're sentenced to forced labor, you can make 20,000 rubles a month, which is about $281.
That's so much money. Oh, wait.
Well, there's not a lot of places to spend it in prison.
Spend it on cigarettes and.
Well, they have commissaries or whatever where you could buy like bubble gum or stuff like that, I think. But actually, this just now reminded me of a problem they used to have in military prison. So when you're in the military, you get sentenced. You get convicted of a crime, they send you to jail. One of the things they always do is demote you to E1, which is the lowest one on the ladder, which means you're getting E1 pay.
Mm-hmm.
So they were throwing these guys to prison, giving them E1 pay or their entire prison sentence, and then letting them out. And they would have this huge, well, not huge, I guess, is relatively speaking, but they would have all of that back pay for however many years they were in prison. When they got out, sometimes thousands of dollars, depending on how long they were in for. But they changed that. I don't know, I wouldn't say necessarily recently, but in the not too distant past, they actually changed that so you don't get paid as an E1 when you're in prison now.
And see,
you're back to the typical prison pay.
I don't know that I agree with that, though, because again, if you walk out of prison and you have literally nothing, what do you have to do except to turn to crime? Because you almost certainly can't get a job. I know that it feels bad. It feels bad to give someone who committed a crime thousands of dollars. But the alternative is that they're just going to turn around and do more crime.
And that goes to what's the purpose of the prison system?
Yeah.
Is it punishment? Is it rehabilitation?
Yeah.
What's the whole point to throw someone in jail?
Yep.
And I think the philosophy and the actuality of those two concepts are, debated.
Yeah,
I'm not sure anybody has a real answer.
So that $281 a month is about almost $2 an hour, assuming a 40-hour work week. And according to Kent State, if you are getting paid in U.S. prisons, U.S. prison pay ranges from 14 cents to $2 an hour. So apparently Russia is a little more generous than many U.S. prisons.
Well, I'm going to say generous, but they valued the labor more.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised that the U.S. pays that high.
I mean, it varies. I'm sure there's probably regional differences.
Yep. But it seems like this whole business is using prison labor in Russia was not something that has always taken place. So apparently they started using prison labor after the creation of the correctional centers in organizations appeared in 2020. So apparently Russia was not doing anything like this before that.
Yet another way that we are way ahead of the curve, apparently.
We're so progressive over here in our prison system. Which is why we have so many.
Yes.
But in a way, why this is important is, how many companies are actually going to be damaged by this because they don't know where their IT support is coming from when they're going through these service providers?
Yeah, my first thought was that this would be an potential insider threat, because my first thought was that ransomware gangs would immediately pay an insider at the prison to provide them with lists of prisoners performing this work and then blackmail them or pay them to bring in ransomware. But they're probably going to be fairly heavily monitored. And like you were talking about, they're probably not going to be brought in directly to the companies. They're probably going to be filtered through MSSPs or something like that. So I actually don't think that these guys are going to be a serious insider threat.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say without knowing what kind of IT work they're actually going to be doing. They're obviously not going to be deploying desktops.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm certain they're not going to be giving them like RDP access into the Active Directory or anything. That would be idiotic.
Yeah. What happens if they get caught doing nefarious stuff when they're on the shop? Do they just get taken off or are they thrown in solitary or, what's going to happen there?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, if you get paid $20,000 or $30,000 to do something, and if you get found out, you just get thrown in solitary for a little while, but the money's still waiting for you when you get out, that's probably worth it.
Right.
Because if they can't prove it or whatever.
Yeah, and if they're skilled enough, what I was thinking was, sure, they're monitoring these folks, and if the kids aren't doing anything, you know, they'll punish them or they'll take them off the job or whatever. But if they're really savvy and they hide a back door or they implement some method to access this place later, and they just wait till they're out of prison, and then they leverage whatever kind of access they gave themselves to come in afterwards.
Especially if they're doing development work. They put that in and then don't touch it for 2 years or 3 years, and then come back in after the fact.
Right. Or maybe it's time delayed, so the back door doesn't even show up till he's out of prison.
Yep.
Yeah, provided he doesn't accidentally shake someone and end up getting more years tacked onto his sentence.
Yeah.
So what I would say, if you're a Russian organization, you might want to
stay away. Stay away.
Well, you might want to do some digging about, how your security service providers or staff in their work.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Because most of the time it's not very transparent. They just swap people out at will.
No. And frequently you don't get named resources anyways. If you just see a first name on your ticket or something, escalated by Peter. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not Black Widow. All right. For our second article, we are talking cryptocurrency laundromat blunder shredded by U.S. Treasury and sanctions first. This is from the Registry. So, of course, that the explains register. The wacky title. Register. I'm going to leave that in there so everybody knows that I can't read.
Summary. Came from the wedding registry.
It came from the registry of my computer. The U.S. Treasury has sanctioned cryptocurrency mixer Blender for its role in helping North Korea's Lazarus Group launder stolen digital assets. Blender also helped several Russian-backed ransomware gangs launder money, according to the Treasury Department, including Trickbot, Conti, Rye UK, Reeble, and Gand Crab. So we've talked about cryptocurrency mixers before. You put in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies and you get back ostensibly clean ones. Because as we've discussed many times, Bitcoin is not anonymous. It's pseudonymous, where you can track it due to the open nature of the blockchain, but you don't know who owns the wallet unless you're trying to get money out, because frequently most exchanges nowadays do require know your customer. So in order to get money in or get money out, you have to submit an ID. So the big issue, if you are doing your nefarious things in Bitcoin, is to get the money out, you have to submit an ID. So these laundering applications help you get clean Bitcoins and get your money out, or at least stop them from tracking it. So Blender has helped transfer more than $500 million in Bitcoin since its creation in 2017, according to the Treasury. It mixes the illicit proceeds with a variety of other transactions, hopefully many of which are legitimate. Although what would be funny here is if the only people that are putting Bitcoin in, what if 100% of the inputs were all illegal? And then it put Bitcoin out to everybody else. Would they still allow prosecution if 100% of the input were all illegal? Or would that still be enough of like a breaking of the chain that the courts wouldn't allow it?
I mean, in the United States, I'm sure they would fly without a problem, because they'd say, well, if Phil and Bob both stole $20 and then they exchanged the $20 where one gave the $20 to the other one, that it would still be the stolen $20. Both of them would have stolen $20. So I think as far as the U.S. is concerned, they would have to say, or they would say that it doesn't matter. They would need the specificity to say, oh, well, I know this Bitcoin went from this wallet into this wallet, which means that it's ill-gotten gains.
Yeah, because I'm going to have to dig this up. I was taking a cryptocurrency class, and one of the things that they had was they were talking about, they made us read a white paper on where they reviewed a bunch of crypto related stuff. And here we go. I'm going to add this into the show notes. One of the things they talked about, unfortunately, this white paper is several years old. It doesn't actually have a date on it, but they went to one of these mixing sites and they submitted crypto into one of these mixing sites, and they got the same crypto back out of it, which to them indicated that not enough people were using the mixing site to really establish any kind of actual mixing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is the paper. I stuck it in the show notes and we'll stick it online. But it was really interesting because
there's not enough volume to actually dilute the transactions.
Right. Because when I was thinking about it, are there any real legitimate use cases for people that would use this? Because criminals would use it for money laundering. Citizens might use it if for some reason they wanted to break the know your customer chain. Maybe they're super privacy oriented, or maybe they wanted to spend their Bitcoins on drugs or deep websites, you know, pay for people to murder their spouses or something. I don't know. But like the vast majority of people would not know that these sites exist, nor would they like go in and try to wash their Bitcoin.
Yeah, actually, I think that's kind of sad because it would be nice if everybody did this, to be honest. Everybody would have, you know, always mixed their Bitcoins or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think like every time you got a Bitcoin, you just immediately went and washed it.
Yep.
Hmm.
Well, it's just part of the acquisition of the Bitcoin. You transfer your wallet and it automatically goes into the mixer. And just everybody does it. So it's, if that would actually bring a higher level, if not true anonymity to Bitcoin and their transactions.
That makes me wonder why they even sanctioned it rather than took over the mixer. If they took over the mixer, maybe they couldn't. Maybe something about this one specifically made it impossible for them to take it over.
I'm not sure where this is. It's probably a matter of where it's physically located.
Yeah, that's probably true. Anyways.
But as far as the question before goes about the you know, if there were 100 illicit transactions in there, I think the key thing there is the certainty of the 100% illicit transactions.
Yeah.
You know, so the government would have to be criminally investigating everybody who used the service and know that all the transactions were illegitimate.
Yeah. Or if there's something like 99 illicit users and one benign user, but the benign user put in one Bitcoin and the illicit users put in 99 Bitcoin.
Yeah. I think there's also some, there would be some question around the illicitness of the transaction. Because even people who conduct criminal activity also conduct regular market activity. So there'd have to be some level of certainty around the money that they put in is from the illicit activity, not from the legitimate activity.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. So what does sanctioning mean? Sanctioning means that no one in the United States and no US people anywhere in the world can do any business with Blender unless they receive special permission from the government. This is citizens, residents, corporations, partnerships, LLCs, trusts or estates, all kinds of basically any organization or human that is associated with the United States.
And well, the key here is it says anyone in the United States or a U.S. person. Now, U.S. person means is a very specific, has a very specific definition of what a U.S. person is. So the thing here is anyone, it says anyone in the United States or a U.S. person. That's specifically what the sanction thing says. And a U.S. person has a very specific definition in the U.S. government and the U.S. intelligence community also, because there are limits. Well, there used to be limits around what intelligence could be collected on a U.S. person. And because they said anyone in the United States and a U.S. person seems to indicate that rather than just saying anyone in the United States, by including and or a U.S. person, that seems to indicate that any U.S. person, regardless of where they're at, cannot interact with this organization. So if you're someone from Spain in the United States, you can't interact with a sanctioned organization. But if you go back to Spain, it's fine. But if you're a U.S. person, according to this definition, it doesn't matter where you're at on the planet, you cannot interact with that sanctioned organization. So I think that's a distinction to realize or pay attention to that. It's not a matter of where you're physically located if you're a U.S. person, according to their definition. But this is the first time the U.S. has ever sanctioned a crypto mixer.
It's the first time it's ever shanked a crypto mixer.
Is too talking about shanking too much in the last session.
That's bleeding over.
I'm sure they would like to shank them. They suppose that the it's, I would call it a hypothesis. They would call it, you know, intelligence, that the Lazarus Group is the crypto gang that works for the North Korean Reconnaissance General Bureau.
We have a high level of confidence that.
And if you recall a few weeks ago, when Matt and I talked about the Axie Infinity
compromise. We went way too deep in that.
This is the group that apparently stole that $620 million, but they only used Blender for 20.5 million of that.
That's interesting. I wonder why. I wonder if Blender didn't have the volume to do the rest, or they were
Be why they used that small amount. You know, we were talking about the ratio of how much needs to be in there in order to be mixed. And according to the Treasury Department, they've only mixed 500 million total in the last 3 years.
It's not 500 million of bad stuff. It's 500 million total. Right. Oh, I see.
So you could throw, if you threw 620 million into that mixer, well, just divide it. At any point in time, there was way less than 500 million available in the mixer.
Gotcha.
In order for that to work.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And the day after the State Department, after they attributed that Ronan Bridge attack to the Lazarus Group, the State Department offered a reward of $5 million for information that helps disrupt North Korea's cryptocurrency theft. And I thought there was an interesting way to state it. Disrupt their cryptocurrency theft.
Yeah, not help catch the bad guys, which makes sense because if they're in North Korea, we're never going to...
Right, but it also doesn't mean that it's specific to the Lazarus Group, because they're talking about North Korea's cryptocurrency theft, so any North Korean cryptocurrency theft.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting.
And I'm not sure what kind of information you would have to give them in order to do, in order to perform a disruption. Because that really kind of depends on the capabilities of the United States and what actions they're planning to take. Because if you give them a name of someone in the Lazarus Group, is that going to be something that they can use to disrupt the currency theft? I mean, this could be just government shady language, so they never have to pay out the $5 million.
Government would pay out. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can always trust them.
100%. I think actually the government would just really enjoy taking down all of these virtual currency mixers.
Well, I think from their perspective, virtual currency, to be honest.
Well, let's stick to just the mixers, since that's what we're talking about right now. From their perspective, all it does is muddle up the trail for them, so they can't track any of it. I think the government would actually love for everybody to move to these virtual currencies, because it allows them to track all the spending, as long as they can't mix it and they can't muddle. Because if they were just doing, you know, working from exchanges with Know Your Customer and using these easily trackable with visible blockchains, I think the government would be totally fine with everybody using Bitcoin.
Oh, actually, you know, now that I think about it, you know what they did to Silk Road, right?
I don't recall exactly what they did.
Well, I think it was Silk Road 2, where the FBI took it over and was actually running it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder how long it's going to be if they have not already stood up their own mixing service.
Kind of how they're doing with Tor.
What's that?
They're standing up their own exit nodes on Tor so they can track people going through. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so I imagine that they will, if they have not already, stood up their own mixing service, which is obviously going to be not anonymous, and it's not going to get any, not going to do what it's designed to do.
Yep.
So I think the market needs to come up with some other way to make that more transparent or open. Yeah, to prevent that kind of thing from happening. Well, not prevent it from happening, but for to add a level of assurance for folks who are using the mixer that is not owned by the U.S. government.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. All right, so why does this matter? How do individuals know and keep track of who's on the sanctions list? Sure, companies have lawyers to tell them what to do. And if you work for a company, you have a long and no doubt drawn out process every time you need to work with a new company.
Yeah, well, the government actually publishes the list of sanctioned organizations and people.
They're not going to check that every time you open up a new website to go do something.
Well, I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying that they do publish it. But the U.S. government, they sanction people every 10 minutes. So really, they need to have an API for this because people can't keep up with it. I mean, large companies have a hard enough time knowing, you know, which other organizations they have always on VPN connections with, let alone whoever they conduct transactions with. Just look at, you know, the number of BEC transactions that happen when they're sending money to the wrong organization.
Yeah. Second item is governments are always going to continue to reduce the freedoms of all humans on this planet in the name of reducing crime. I took a look and found a lovely article by Chainalysis that found that crypto had $15.8 trillion in transactions in 2020. Although what's kind of weird here is it said illicit addresses only received $14 billion over the course of the year. That seems low.
Well, that would seem to indicate then that the amount of mixing that's going on for people who are doing it without illicit intent is huge. It's, you know, what's that, 100 times or 1,000 times more legitimate transactions versus illicit transactions?
Well, no, remember Blender was only 500 million in 5 years.
Right. But if you had 15.8 trillion in transactions and only 14 billion of that was illicit.
Yep.
You know, that's 1,000 times more regular transactions versus illicit transactions. Yeah.
Yes. Sorry, I thought you were trying to tie that back to the laundering part. So no, illicit use was less than 1% of crypto use in 2021. Although I'll be honest, what I kind of wish they had in here was how much of those transactions were people buying for investment versus people actually using for legitimate transactions. Because I imagine a giant part of that is people just buying and holding or buying and like trading versus purchasing products and services with it.
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I think it's probably pretty low. Because at least right now, right now it might start picking up because the bank, the crypto is dropping. But previously, I don't know if you remember this, one of the first transactions that was done to Bitcoin or not.
Pizza?
I think it was 9 Bitcoin for pizza. You know, so at the height of the value of crypto, that would have been, $560,000 or something like that?
That's the most expensive pizza.
That's a really expensive pizza. So as long as the value of crypto was going up, the number of people that are actually transacting in Bitcoin was probably pretty low because you'd be throwing away money to buy that pizza.
Yeah. Well, I'll stick the link to that Chainalysis report. They have a full report. We should actually do that. We should do a review of that full report in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
That actually might be really interesting because they've got their 2021 list and they actually break it down based on how much people are. So that 14 billion is broken down into like stolen funds, scams, ransomware, child abuse material, darknet market, fraud shop, like how much is being spent on each of those things.
Well, yeah, that would be good.
So like the vast majority of it is scam and stolen funds. And then in darknet market, those seem to be the three largest ones. So, all right. My third point is, would the government be doing this if companies weren't so shit at defending their networks?
Like the government?
I mean, yeah. Anyways, so what can you do? What can or should you do about it? If you care about your privacy, you should do something about it now, because like always, the government is going to be reducing the narrow aperture at which you can be maintaining your privacy. They're working on shutting down these mixers now. If you have Bitcoin and you care about them being anonymous, you need to do it now. You need to start pushing them through these mixers now and then stick them in a wallet that's completely unassociated with your name or any Know Your Customer or anything, and make sure never to put anything that's gone through a Know Your Customer exchange in those wallets. Keep them completely separate from your other networks because that's how they identify you. They track it on the blockchain. If you go through all the effort to disambiguate those Bitcoin from you now, and you stick it in a wallet, and then in 6 months, you transfer one of those other Bitcoin into that wallet that you just bought on Coinbase, like poof, now you've connected all those Bitcoin again. Congratulations. You just wasted all that effort.
Yeah. Be careful which mixer you use. Cause like I said, I think that if they haven't already, the government is going to own or be managing these mixers.
Yeah. Is it worth using multiple mixers then? Because they might see you coming into one, but then you would go into another one and come out of another one and go into another one, come out of another one. It'd be like using multiple proxies where maybe they see you come in and out of a couple, but they probably don't control all of them.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, it might be worth doing. again, depending on how much you care about it. If you're planning on, well, I would never encourage illegal activities, especially not if I was being recorded. Well, that looks like that's all the articles we have for today. Thank you for joining us. Follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter. And who knows, maybe you'll get updated one day. And subscribe on your favorite podcast app.